Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Good evening, everybody. You have made it. You are on Super Tuesday's super special show of Stu and the Nun. I am the Nun, and with me, as always, is my beautiful bald co-host, my brother from another motherland up there in the cold, tepid area of Buffalo, New York. Stu, what's going on, my brother?
What's up, man? How you doing? It is good to be here. And yes, it's a tad chilly out. I think it is... 29 or 30 degrees right now. Hey, we're making it. Coming to you from the up north, from the northern studio, still rocking this nice new microphone and mic stand and feeling all professional still. But good to be with you and good to be with our audience tonight here on our 28th episode.
They happen so fast. You know,
yes.
Once we were just a young fledgling podcast in a galaxy far, far away, and now we are on episode 28. It is Super Tuesday. Lots going on. Already in the books, it looks like Georgia is in the books on the GOP side. It also looks like Alabama, Massachusetts, and Tennessee are in the books on the GOP side for a guy by the name of Trump.
Is he popular?
Apparently, you know, he's slinging it like bricks and mortar building a wall that he ain't paying for. You know, he's doing it. On the Democratic side, looks like it's going a little bit of both ways. We got the state of Vermont going to its home candidate of Bernie Sanders on the independent tip, and then it looks like his counterpart and adversary fighting for delegates, Hillary Rodham Clinton,
HRC,
is picking up the state as well.
Well, Drudge right now is reporting Clinton is picking up, this may be a little early, but they're saying they're calling Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and Virginia, and they're calling Alabama, Georgia, Massachusetts, which just recently had 20,000 Democrats leave the Democratic Party, in Tennessee, all for Trump. So we'll see what that happens. That's some big news, too. 20,000 people in Massachusetts leaving the party, going independent or Republican. I guess it's not just Republicans that are upset with the establishment.
No, I mean, in the words of the late, great American troubadour Johnny Carson, that's some weird and wacky stuff.
Oh, you threw it back a day. I think only some of our older listeners would even get that reference. But, and speaking of older listeners, we do have an older guest tonight. I don't know if you want to let our listeners know a little bit about that, or you want me to intro him or talk about him?
Well, he is our awkward uncle.
Yeah, he's like that uncle that, well, you know, that uncle, right? That's him.
Well, he's not Uncle Buck. I mean,
no.
You know, like, he's no Uncle Buck, but he is that awkward uncle to some young, bald, fledgling men. An amazing special forces warfighter, warfare expert, counterterrorism expert. and Fox News analyst. Some call him Mr., some call him Sir. We call him Uncle, and that's Jim Hansen, James Hansen, but to us, Uncle Jimbo. He'll be joining us here shortly. Pretty excited about that.
Some call him a space cowboy. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, and he'll be on tonight. We've had him on before. I don't remember what episode. It probably was like in the teens or something, but or in the single digits. But, yeah, Jim is a, as you said, has really been hitting it. I think it was definitely an early episode, probably in our first dozen. He was hitting it on Fox and was doing a lot of stuff. And as a VP at the Center for Security Policy, he is now has a new website up, and we're going to talk to him about that, called counterjihad.com. Counterjihad.com. They're also on Facebook.com/thecounterjihad. And so we're going to talk to him about that, why they have this website, what its intent is, its mission, and like why are they going through all the efforts and stuff to build. Actually, a sharp-looking website. It really is good-looking. So it puts some money and effort into it.
And I'd also be willing to take the over-under on how long it takes before it gets shut down by Facebook.
Yeah, I hope they have a Twitter, too. I think they do.
Pretty excited about that stuff. It's been a wild week. We're coming off some amazing, great guests and keeping the punches rolling right now. You know, coming off the Force Comm Commander, United States Army General Abrams, into the Danish filmmaker Tobias
Which I watched the Oscars the other night. I really just wanted to watch and see him win. I had to get through all the other crap to watch that. And I saw him on there, but I was so hurt that I really wish he would have won.
Unfortunately, that's, I think, the nature of the film industry. The Academy has a very short attention span, and they have a formula that they subconsciously follow. And I think, part of that has to do with, why people made certain assumptions about this year's white approach, which, I disagree with. I think that was, honestly, I think that was trumped up. How do you put it? Like, I think that was created. That situation, that drama was created. You're looking for people trying to make themselves relevant. Will Smith, great film that he did, Concussion. Was it amazing? Yeah, but I don't think it's Academy Award winning stuff. But how quick he forgets, that he's been nominated in the past and walked across stages in the past. And so all that stuff. And I really felt bad, for the host, Chris Rock, because, man, when you spend 3 hours pushing an agenda that hard, I mean, how long does it take to recover from that? It must take a while.
Well, it's interesting because it was interesting because he ripped into Hollywood a little bit. He was like, when he was talking about, they never complained about this in the 50s and 60s because they were worried about real stuff to protest over. So he kind of ripped into a little bit and ripped into about Hollywood, about sexism and this stuff. But then he kept on it. I mean, every time he came back out, I thought maybe he'd have some new jokes. I mean, if that didn't happen, I kind of wondered at the end of it, like, if Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith and Spike Lee didn't do all that crap, well, their writers would actually have to come up with some jokes, because there was nothing but that,
I'm going to give a shout-out quickly to the Kevin Hart, the comedian, because, I thought his approach to it was far more professional, which blew my mind because, he's a comedian and they're known for being completely unprofessional. And he hangs out with Will Ferrell, which I'm sure has corrupted his mind. And, he just said, if you're not nominated, don't get butt hurt, work harder. And,
right.
That's obviously paraphrasing, but I'm glad someone else, said that, someone, that opinion counts, because it's too bad we're creating a lot of stuff that we don't need to create. But the Oscars, interesting you know, selections. Pretty neat stuff, and such a uniquely an American experience. Everything about it, you know, it dominated our news, it dominated our feeds.
It's right there for the Super Bowl. I mean, it's watched all over the world. You know,
And it's bet on as much as the Super Bowl. It's amazing how much money, in terms of wagering, you know, changes hands officially and unofficially on movies. And, you know, that's one of the really neat things, you know, in terms of like from a gambling perspective, not saying I'm a degenerate, but, you know, it's hard to handicap, you know, because, you know, the votes are so tightly held that some of the films aren't even watched. So, you know, movies get submitted, you know, for the award presentation, but they don't, you know, hit the theaters till like after the votes are done. So a lot of times people have no idea like what film is being referenced. So it's real neat to see how big of an event that is. Of course, you know, like, you know, things make it funny, you know, the need to like watch what people are wearing and, you know, what people are, you know, stating in terms of, you know, political agendas. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, congratulations. I think he's an amazing actor. I think he's deserved the award once or twice before anyway. But, you know, it takes the opportunity to, instead of like, you know, taking that moment to make, you know, a statement about social change or social, you know, importance. And obviously his big agenda is the environment. You know, people in the past have used it, you know, for anti-war sentiment. People in the past have used it for, you know, sexism. People, you know, so it's interesting, you know, like you really get a cross-section of American ideals on all fronts in one night while wearing tuxedos and, you know, swans that are coming out of people's orifices.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, I mean, like you said, he probably did deserve it. I think he did. And you know, there were some really good acceptance speeches up there. There were some people. I think Louis C.K. just nailed it. You know, when he talked about the documentary short film and, like, you know, the rest of you are going to go home rich and you're all going to go home. But these people, like, this Oscar's going home in a Civic. You know, I was just like, he was just nailing it. Like, you know, the people doing, like, documentary short films are like, this means everything to them versus the people that just put it up on the counter with something else. It's probably one of the best introductions. And I got to say, man, Lady Gaga, she nailed it, just like she did the national anthem at the Super Bowl. I think her song was outstanding and pretty moving with the victims of sexual assault. She pulled it there on the stage. I was pretty impressed with that. But you know,
she's all grown up. You know,
yeah.
I watched a really cool video with her giving a speech, an impromptu, informal type talk at a university. And, you know, the question was, you know, why have you stopped, you know, working in the music industry the way that you used to? You know, and she really just kind of said, hey, you know, I'm not proud of how the business is conducted. I'm not proud of how it forced me to conduct myself. And I felt like I was being, you know, less of an artist and more of a commodity. She really kind of like has some values, and, you know, it's hard to comprehend that a young lady wearing a meat dress has values sometimes, you know, in terms of taking her seriously. But, you know, she could be making a lot more money than she's making, and she's a tremendously talented young woman. Like, I never want to shortchange her the opportunity of the glory that she's, you know, earned in terms of her talent. But she's taken a very, very mature approach to it, super professional, and she's just come out with two back-to-back earth-shaking performances. You can't think of her now in terms of a meat dress. You have to think of her as the girl that sang the national anthem, and in my opinion, I think did a better job than Whitney Houston, and because she meant it. I don't think she was just performing. I think, like, she actually meant the words that she was singing. She believes in it. She has a moral fabric. She's demonstrating it. And I think her performance at the Oscars, you know, just caveats and backs that up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, here's some late breaking news. This is blowing up the internet right now, especially the Twitter world. So let me just drop this on you and our listeners who maybe not on Twitter. So I guess Donald Trump just a little while ago dropped a made a tweet that the people of South Carolina are embarrassed by Nikki Haley, which it was deleted later. And Nikki, for anyone from the South, would totally understand this. She dropped a bless your heart on Donald Trump on Twitter. So that is now blowing up like crazy. There's almost 10,000 likes of that. So anyone from the South knows when someone drops a bless your heart on you, it's there's really another meaning behind all that. So, yeah, things are not slowing down in the political Twitter world, if you would. But
like when she said bless your heart, she meant like, oh, bless his heart.
Well, I think she meant like Justin Bieber's song about go love yourself. Yeah, that's pretty much what bless your heart means. Yeah, that's exactly what bless. That's what bless your heart means. That's what we say it in the South, and not to be offensive or offend any or use bad words. So we just say bless your heart, which pretty much means the same thing. Yeah. So.
And on behalf of all of Canada, I appreciate you bringing our Prime Minister into it, and his illustrious music career.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also, speaking of Canada, again, drinking a nice Labatt Blue since I just got off the hockey rink and hockey practice. So what better to quench your thirst from being on the ice than a Canadian-made Labatt Blue. So that's what I'm sipping on tonight. So things are happening. I'm waiting for our first guest here. I need to drop him a text and make sure he has he's on track with us. He's not in. Well, we know he's not in some bar doing anything bad, but make sure he isn't. Maybe he's getting pulled on O'Reilly for all we know.
It's possible.
So I kind of want to hit on. I kind of want to hit on some other stuff that has kind of been in the news lately. That I was just this whole thing with. The Black Lives Matter and before we get into that, I just want to kind of go on this. I want to give a big congratulations and a big pat on the back virtually to Mr. Ed Byers, Navy SEAL, who on Monday was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, the Naval Congressional Medal of Honor, which I'm not sure if everyone realizes that each branch has their own little flavor twist on it. You know, they're not all exactly the same. I don't think most people know that. They have a little bit different look to them. The naval one is pretty interesting. It's got an anchor holding up the medal itself to the ribbon, which is pretty cool. But yeah, Ed Byers Jr. Awarded the Medal of Honor on Monday. I was working out of my office and able to watch the ceremony. It actually went very well. The president did a very good job. He busted a few jokes. And I put up a blog on my blog, if I should so shamelessly plug it, boohammer.com, which actually just went through a complete change out and has a whole new look as of last week. It's totally been redone, but I put up a story about him and Nicholas Check. Nick Check was the other Navy SEAL who did not survive that mission, and Ed saved the doctor and took out a whole bunch of bad dudes, including hand-to-hand. He then, as a medic, also in the SEALs, fought all the way back to the hospital to try to save Nick's life, but wasn't able to do so. But, I mean, just a phenomenal Navy SEAL story and sailor that I know this whole country can be proud of. Let's give that a shot.
I'm grateful. It's in my notes. I was going to talk about that near the end. One of the things I just want to, while we're talking about it, I think it's phenomenal that someone from that community is being recognized, that's the community that expects zero recognition despite, the number of book and movie deals.
They got a lot of books. Yeah.
This guy truly is a quiet professional. And one of the reasons why, it's painfully obvious what a quiet professional he is this doctor
this doctor got himself in the situation that he was in. And this doctor has not been the friend to America, yet when, you know, what was warned to him would happen and what inevitably did happen, we still, America, went and saved one of our people, where a lot of people feel that he didn't deserve it. And even after he got saved, he did not say light things. He made up stories. He made up accusations of war crimes about his rescue. This guy is not the shining example of deserving hostage that has been rescued. But right, this dude, like, held a dude down and throat punched him while trying to, you know, like, deal with his battle buddy, his partner, his frogman brother being damaged. I mean, just, you know.
Well, yeah, he was laying on top of
the service.
Right, laying on top and covering, using his body as the shield for the rescue, for the hostage, while, like you said, grabbing the guy by the throat and freaking dealing with him and with one hand, and who knows what else, the other hand, probably popping caps on somebody, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, what selfless service, what deserving, I mean, that, I'm glad that this story came to light. And anybody that has an award in the military has probably gone back and looked at the citation and been like, wow, like that really happened. I was part of that. This dude, like, you know, you're a bad mofo when you have throat punched the enemy as part of your, like, as part of your citation. I mean, like,
yeah.
Like, I can imagine some guy typing this up going, my man, right. My man.
Four or five, I think five bronze stars with V-devices, right? None of those earned lightly. None of those just handed out, you know, for getting the top score on something. You know, he had already accomplished so much and then, like I say, did this hand to hand. It reminds me of Sergeant First Class, was it Petrie? Wasn't it
Petrie?
Didn't he also have some? Leroy Petrie. Well, I want to say it was him. I thought it was, or I'm trying to remember, one of the guys that had. They had some hand to hand. So I know Petrie lost his in the grenade, but I remember there was some hand to hand, like, close contact stuff, in one of the other guys that was awarded the Medal of Honor. But yeah, that's just a whole new level of badass. Kind of like our Dave Delia, right? You know, when you're down, when you're beating somebody with a freaking sappy plate and stabbing them in the face with a Gerber, you're in it.
That's right.
There's not a battle drill for that one. But, so anyways, well, I don't know where Jimbo is, but we know if he doesn't get in.
But that's all right. We have a lot more that we cover in his absence, but go ahead.
No, I said we'll be busting on him if he doesn't. But, yeah. Hey, we do have some music I want to play now. We haven't played music in a while, Toby. I would like to play some tonight.
Oh.
It's kind of a perfect night for this song, to be quite honest. You want to play it now or you want to wait a little bit?
Well, you know, in honor of Super Tuesday, and we are knocking down the door of the halfway point, fire it up. Let's listen to it. I'm a big fan of this guy. I see him at SHOT Show. NRA, I see him around. I follow him on Facebook and Twitter. I'm great American, great family man, supporter of the military. In fact, you and I, we might have a drunken selfie with this gentleman in D.C.
Yeah, I think we do. I think we have a couple pictures with him in D.C. So tonight for you, it's been a while since we played a song here on Stu and the Nun, a little Mark Wills, Looking for America. What better song could there be? We're going to play it. We'll be back on the backside of that.
I'm chasing down a memory of the way things used to be. Kids playing underneath an old street light, knowing they were safe when they laid down at night. I'm looking for something I ain't seen in a while. I'm looking for a factory where a man can feed his family. Not worried about them moving it south, closing the doors and shutting her down tomorrow. I'm looking for America. The land of the free and the home of the brave. Seems like I just woke up one day and it was gone, long gone. But I know in my heart it's still out there. Can somebody please tell me where? I'm looking for America. I'm searching for an old church steeple where inside you'll find people who live their lives unashamed and they ain't afraid to say God's name out loud. Yeah, I'm looking for America. The land of the free and the home of the brave. Seems like I just woke up one day. White and blue, still believe freedom isn't free, and I guess it's up to you and me to find it. Yeah, we gotta find it, 'cause we're looking for the land of the free and the home of the brave. Seems like I just woke up one day.
There you go, little Mark Wills, Looking for America. Probably the most appropriate song for tonight, as that's what a lot of people are doing. They're looking for America and trying to find it through the polls. So
it was really, really interesting. You know, before the show, I was listening to Bernie Sanders' acceptance speech of victory for his home state of Vermont. And, you know, I tuned out, like, his agenda. I tuned out his, you know, philosophy, and I just listened to the words. And, you know, he actually said exactly what's on the mind of, you know, most Americans, except his meaning for it is a little bit different. You know, people are looking for a change. People are not wanting status quo. People know that this election means more than, you know, just, you know, a party affiliation. Like, we're, America's at a crossroads. And it was real interesting to hear it, what he was saying, and put it in the context of, you know, he's speaking on, you know, what most people are thinking. Just people have different approaches to it. And what a powerful election season this is. This might be one of the most powerful of my lifespan. And I'm pretty motivated and working diligently to be in a position to be part of it.
Sorry about that. I got a bulldog next to me that was distracting me.
This is a good-looking bulldog.
He's a good looking bulldog. Yeah. The no, it's it is it's purely, you know, and that's what these I guess I know something I want to rant about when we got some time, and it kind of ties into this, you know. Let's talk about this whole Supreme Court thing and Justice Scalia replacement. Something I want to talk about last week, but we had so much going on we didn't get a chance. And it kind of drives to the heart of what this is all about. I mean, I get it. We want, you know, a good – one thing I guess that frustrates me is this whole concept of, you know, the Supreme Court, justices blind. There's not supposed to be any party affiliation with either one of them or with any of them. And they're not supposed to be there's not supposed to be – a slant, right? It's like, that's the process. I agree, get it that we want concert, you know, people that we all want someone that thinks like us to be on the court. But as we found out through Justice Roberts and others, just because a person is picked by a certain president that is in a certain party does not necessarily mean they're going to vote that way. So that's why we have the checks and balances of the Senate. And it's not just automatic. But this whole thing with can't pick them, you know, they shouldn't be picking this unwritten rule. It's just crap. It's like, this is what the American people are sick of. Follow the Constitution, follow the process. Let him pick somebody. Hopefully he picks someone that he thinks is truly qualified and not someone that is, you know, that worked on the Obama campaign or things like him. And hopefully, and I know hope is not a method, the Senate vets that person. And they go through everything, and they make sure that the person is as objective as possible to really interpret the letter of the law and the Constitution. But this whole crap that we've seen about, you know, not picking anyone, letting it sit open, and one party claims that, you know, that back when their president was in charge, that, you know, the other party tried to block it, now blah, blah. That's what the American people are sick of. That's why Trump is winning. That's why Bernie even has a chance. That's why 20,000 Massachusetts people are bailing on the Democratic Party, because they don't want a socialist in office, but they absolutely cannot vote for Hillary, so at least will they vote for Trump. I mean, that's what's leading this. And great that we're wanting someone from outside the establishment to go in there, but part of me, and I want you to respond on some of this, part of me also gets mad about all this crap, because this is the same way that Obama got put in office, because everyone was just sick of whatever the way it was and saw him as this new and hope and change and young and outside the establishment kind of guy. That's how he got put in office. It doesn't mean that shouldn't be the reason, but it's like, that shouldn't be the only reason that we're voting for someone just because we're so mad at everyone else. Then quit putting these Congress, these elected representatives in the frickin' office.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, as a young man and as a man going through the naturalization process, you know, I have to pass tests on my understanding of how America works and its, you know, governing body and such. And, you know, the check and balance of the judicial system, the legislative and the executive branch, you know, I completely agree with you. You know, this should be someone that is qualified, and someone that will uphold what the forefathers and what the foundation and the founding documents are about. And I found it interesting, you know, like, and when I was thinking about this, you and I, you know, kind of, you know, prefaced the fact that we wanted to talk about this. One of the things that I've wanted to bring up was Clarence Thomas. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, went through crazy public ridicule. They went into his personal life. You know, they found a marital indiscretion. They did everything they could. But the bottom line was, he was qualified. He met the criteria and he got the appointment. And it took a substantial amount of time. I mean, the American public were enamored by his case for months, and it was a leading news story. And the guy's, you know, been on the bench for however many years, and uttered his first words from the bench in public last week. And, you know, it's the reason I bring him up is I think he's a good example of, like, you know, your feed, just like my feed and a lot of other people's, you know, feeds have been filled with videos of like current vice president, then, you know, member of, you know, Congress, Biden, talking about, you know, how we should hold back. And then, you know, using the different parties' speeches about the different parties, like you said. And like, yeah, it's horribly unfortunate that, you know, this justice, you know, passed away. I noticed that no one celebrated his life. I noticed that there was no state funeral celebrating his efforts. And if there was, well, it sure wasn't on the mainstream media. You know, there was conspiracy theorists going around about how he was probably killed. A pillow was found over his head, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, who took the time to celebrate his life? You know, they immediately spoke about his replacement. Let's not forget that this person, you know, after being nominated and appointed to that position, served for life. Like, not like till I get tired and I can't do it anymore. Like, for life. One of the most painstaking, deepest commitments that a person can give in terms of public service is the Supreme Court. Now, you can be the leader of the country, but at the end of your term, or if you get reelected at the end of your second term, you're done. You enjoy, you know, Secret Service details. You get on the speaker's tour. You know, you go to South Carolina and you give speeches about your wife and how awesome she is.
You get free, you know, free arguments with and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah,
right. Yeah. But like these people give their entire lives to this nation.
Yeah,
and
it's
to
rare.
Its
like
foundation.
You know, Sandra Day O'Connor, she resigned early, but that's rare. Most do go all the way to the end, you know. And you bring up a good point. I think about it. Really, no one did. It really went to controversy at the pit, and then because all the political people got on, you know, all the people running for office wanted to get in on it, and then it went into the conspiracy stuff. You know, I'm surprised I didn't hear the word Jade Helm thrown in there. That, you know, somehow they were responsible for the kill of Wolverine.
Well, Jade Helm did it.
Yeah. Okay. See, I knew it was in the same state. I'm just saying. Just saying. So, you know, it's the whole thing is just, I look at it and go, that's why American people are pissed. Because
it really was sad.
If they don't make the cut.
Yeah, and it's just, it's too bad. And, you know, the next person, whoever it is, that gets this position, undoubtedly is going to be deserving, is going to be one of the most important and influential Americans, you know. And so it's really sad. I really wish they'd have treated, you know, Scalia's passing with a little more dignity. I think he deserves a lot more respect, whether you agree with all of his decisions or any of his decisions or not. But I really, really really wish that he was treated, and especially the end of his term, treated with more respect, his term being his life.
Right. Absolutely. So another hot thing that just came out, I guess, while we're talking topics, because I'm not sure Jimbo's going to make it, is this the last of the emails from were released by the State Department. Did you see that? And the some of the stuff that's coming out about that, I think it was released last night. It's the noose is tightening, it looks like. Bernie may be the only one left to run in the Democratic Party in the next year.
Yeah, no, like the memes have been fantastic the past couple days. You know, I saw a great one with you know, Richard Nixon and Hillary. You know, unfortunately, you know, I'm going to quote Donald Trump, and I'm going to say that he could do whatever he wants. He could walk into the street and shoot somebody, and it's not going to affect his situation. And I think she's like that. You know, people really aren't digging into it. When that young Marine started quoting Bill Clinton, and I agree, it was unprofessional. That's not the platform to do it. I think, you know, that young man was like seeking a little additional attention. I applaud his efforts to try and seek truth. That might not have been the appropriate way to go about it. But I will say one of the things that really kind of bothered me is like people booed him when he brought up Benghazi. And it's like, people really just are willing to overlook.
They act like it's made up. They act like the whole thing's made up by some political party, like it didn't really happen.
Yeah. And here's like, on that note, the last thing I'm going to speak about is simply I'm going to bring up Bernie Sanders. And from what I understand, the guy was a conscientious objector. And being a conscientious objector, that's saying that you feel that your moral code doesn't allow you the ability to make decisions faced with combat. And that you don't want to have to be in a situation where you would compromise what your moral fabric or your faith fabric would be. And for me, I kind of have to believe that's borderline, you know, like, well, not borderline. To me, that disqualifies you to be the commander in chief. If you can't, if you feel that you can't make the decision in combat yourself, then how can you possibly feel qualified to make the decision as a leader for men in combat morally? So that's where I'm at. I believe we finally have the one and only Jim Hansen, Jimbo, on the line. So I say let's bring that guy on and let everybody know what Fox News analyst, founder of the great new website, as Troy was talking about earlier, Uncle Jimbo, Jim Hansen. What's going on, my brother?
Hey, guys. I am sorry for being late, but thanks for putting up with me.
Drop and give us 20. As soon as the show's over, just knock them the hell out like you know you need to.
Yeah,
they're gonna be
drop
virtual,
and give us the Guinness.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, guys, I heard you were I appreciate your you having me on and starting the conversation about the counter-jihad. It's going to be some fun.
Well, tell us about it, my man.
Well, here's the deal. I think most of us sentient beings have come to the unavoidable conclusion that there is a particular group of people who are trying to kill or enslave or force the rest of us to submit. And I think it's fair to say that it's not all Muslims, but it is a considerable number of them, and they have been fighting us. You know, they have been slaughtering people overseas, slaughtering people here, and they've got a whole lot of other, I guess, tactics and techniques they use to promote, you know, the supremacist wing of their religion, Islam, and we've had enough. You know, we're done putting up with it. And the counter jihad is a way for ordinary folks to learn about what's going on and see what they can do to help stop it.
Right, right. So, I mean, let's back this up a little bit. So this side, counter jihad, which, by the way, from one of my computers, my work one, I couldn't even get to it because I guess the word jihad's in there, so I had to get to it for my personal. But I guess, is that what's behind this? I mean, can you give us a little bit of history or some of the drive or mission of why you're doing this? You guys definitely, it's a great looking site. You put a lot of energy and time and resources into it. So,
here's the deal. The Center for Security Policy, where I work, has been learning, teaching, analyzing, and trying to find out exactly what our enemy is up to for 26 years. And I think one of the things you can do in a think tank type environment is you can basically overthink things, overanalyze them, build giant, thick, dusty books that get stuck in the back of the library and nobody reads them anymore. And what we wanted to do was, you know, we've got a magnificent military. And to the extent the current president will allow them, they are kicking the crap out of the jihadists overseas. You know, anytime somebody from ISIS pops their head up, Al-Qaeda or anybody else, we squash them like a bug. Now, obviously, our foreign policy would be a lot better served if, as I mentioned, the current inhabitant of the White House actually wanted to defeat them. But fighting the jihadists on the battlefield is the job of the United States military, the CIA, and the related agencies. But the same groups and the same people with the same ideology, and I think the best way to describe them is Sharia-adherent Muslims. Sharia is Islamic law. It's a totalitarian system. And they basically follow with a mandate from their God to impose it on everyone worldwide. And so while the military is fighting them overseas, they're also trying to infiltrate our civil society here. They've done a great job of doing that in Europe. And basically, we're fronting them out, and we're pointing out where organizations like CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations, and the Islamic Society of North America, and the Muslim student associations on campus are all funded and organized and working for the bad guys in many ways. So this is a way for that information to be explained to the general public, so you don't have to be, you know, a Quranic scholar of some sort who studied Islam for their entire life to figure out what's happening right here in the United States. And once we get people educated, we're going to be pointing out ways that they can oppose this and help all of us stop these guys from trying to subvert us from within.
All right. Well, that's some lofty. And now, have you, what kind of Toby is putting up an over under, putting bets on how long your site will stay up on Facebook before they kick you off. But what kind of pushback have you guys had? What kind of hate mail or mean tweets have you received?
Oh, dude, it's wonderful. I mean, the kind of the joy of this is the other side. You know, the political left, for some reason, the same people who support the gay rights movement, who support feminists, and who basically are the ones always screaming about human rights, have a blind spot and a soft spot for the Islamists, you know, for the jihadists, the same guys who toss gays off roofs, you know, who put women in potato sacks, who enslave little girls. They protect them and try to stop people like us from pointing out the horrible things to be too. It's just stunning. And so in the current situation, just about 2 weeks ago, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which, you know, back in the day was a group that fought for freedom, now they do a hate group list, and they put the Center for Security Policy on the list. And, you know, to some extent, that's like, well, thanks for recognizing our good work, guys, because if we've made you angry, you know, we're obviously doing something right. And I think it's a fair bet, you know, as far as how long before Facebook or somebody wants to ban the counter jihad. There's nothing up there that isn't in academic work and other things, so it would be a complete travesty if they do. But I think you guys are exactly right. They will try to shut us down. That's one of their tools. You know, it's censorship of speech critical of Islam, and we are critical of those Islamists trying to take over the world.
Right, right. Hey, you said something a second ago about how we're kicking their butts wherever our military goes all over. And it kind of spins into something that just came out. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter and others in the administration are talking about how they've taken the gloves off of the most elite of the quiet professionals, Delta Force, and they're over there now apparently kicking butt and taking names on ISIS. And that's great. We all have probably knew, some of us knew that and expected that. But for throwing it out there in a public eye like this and touting it, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's good or bad, or it really doesn't have much of an impact?
You know, I think there is very little this administration has done since coming into power that wasn't more politically motivated than national security motivated. You know, they make decisions based on polling. They make decisions on trying to appease the public. And in doing so, they put our military at greater risk. And I think this is just another example of it. You're not supposed to talk about that. That's why they're clandestine and covert and, you know, operations that basically no one but those in the know should ever know happened until it's way too late. So when they start doing things like they did with the bin Laden raid, like they've done every time the polls seem to get bad, that's when the special operations raids start happening and even worse, start getting reported in the New York Times and the Washington Post. It's a disgrace, but unfortunately, it's par for the course for our bad golfer in chief.
I love how you brought up like the political motivation, because you know we've entered into another round of talks and political pressure and discussion about Guantanamo Bay. And one, there's a lot more to Guantanamo Bay than, you know, the detention camp. In fact, there's a lot more to it than the detention camp. But, you know, because a political promise, you know, was made however many years ago, 7.5 years ago, 8 years ago, you know, like we're going to redefine, you know, one, like, our policy in terms of how we're going to, you know, face these threats in the future legally. And two, we're going to endanger Americans, you know, by bringing, you know, folks here, because now, you know, it's pretty naive to think that people aren't trying to find them or to assist them in some way. And two, the recidivism rate is ridiculous. So like, what are your thoughts on that, since we're counter-jihading it?
Yeah, no, I mean, Obama has been, now let's be clear, we started releasing people out of Gitmo under Bush, and I think there probably at some point were a number of those folks who, if not, you know, the most heinous of the jihadists, they were pretty bad, and you know, we should have hopefully been able to do something better than just release them to the wild, but they weren't the true most evil leaders of the enemy's forces. That's all that's been left in Gitmo for the past, well, basically for all of Obama's term. The people he's been releasing constantly over the past 7 years are overwhelmingly, as you pointed out, Toby, going back to the fight. So after, you know, risking our lives to capture them in the first place, now we're turning them loose so they can kill more innocent civilians and kill more of our troops when they meet them on the battlefield again. Now, I think there was actually a positive development just about a week ago as far as Obama's ability to close Gitmo. Because the bottom line is, he promised to close it, but Congress passed a law that says he cannot expend any funds for anything related to closing Gitmo or bringing those prisoners to the United States. And that's, you know, that's one of those good checks and balances that we have between the branches. The president is not free to do anything. He has to have money appropriated and given to him by Congress to do it. So they said he can't do that. And just this last week, there was a letter that was sent from about a dozen members of Congress, most of whom were veterans, asking the Department of Defense, basically, what are you guys going to do if, like Obama promised, he tries to close Gitmo by executive action? And the nice thing was, the Joint Chiefs, because they're military officers, aren't allowed to just opine on things and disagree with the president, with the commander in chief. He's their boss. So, you know, the UCMJ forbids them from speaking out. But because Congress asked them in a letter whether or not they would comply with an Obama order to turn those troops over and close, or turn those prisoners over and close Gitmo, they answered back saying, hell no, we can't. It's against the law. So it was actually a really big blow to Obama's opportunity to try and do that. Because they said, the Joint Chiefs said no. And so it could get a little interesting if he tries to do it, because they rightly said it's illegal for us to do it, therefore we will not do it. So I think he's in trouble for trying to actually finish off that promise.
Well, he hasn't been able to do it in 8 years, and this last one is sprint. I mean, I don't know why he thinks he's going to do it now, but you know, maybe he's that drunk on his own Kool-Aid.
That's true.
But, to get back to counter-jihad, I guess, so we talked a little bit about the pushback and the Southern Law Poverty Center and all that stuff, but how's the acceptance been? What kind of positive things have you heard, both formally, or if you can give us, you know, without keeping people's identities hidden, even informally or off the record, if you've gotten any? How's it been?
You know, the most common thing we've heard is it's about damn time. You know, and that's from people, because it's not like, you know, this is news to anybody that the bad guys are trying to do this. People watch the news. They see that there's kids in school being forced to wear a hijab on, you know, Be a Muslim Day, or to recite the Muslim prayer. And they know that, you know, there's truck drivers who refuse to transport beer, which is, if there's something un-American on earth, it is refusing to transport beer. And they got fired and won a $250,000 settlement because their religion says they're allowed to refuse to do what their employer needs them to do. So people see this happening, and they're not blind. You know, and they know that there's mosques saying things that no mosque should be saying. They know that there's people coming here who have bad intentions. San Bernardino, Boston Marathon, you know, we had the shootings in Chattanooga. They know this is happening, and they just don't know what they can do because they know the president's not going to do anything. He's already made his allegiances clear, and he may not be a Muslim, and I don't think he is, but he is certainly aligned with their goals. And because of that, we don't have a recourse. So there's been kind of a hunger among people for a way to do something and something to do. So we have gotten a ton of email, and in the first week the site was operational, we got over 5,000 likes on our Facebook page, and we had 10,000 people total sign up, give us their email address, and ask to be part of the Counter Jihad. So I think that's a pretty ringing endorsement, and they all were saying, just tell us what we can do. So first thing we're doing is educating people. There's a lot of fairly easily digestible, I think, material on the site about what the enemy's up to, what they're doing, the names of this, what is Sharia law, who is the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, what are they up to? And we want people to get a little educated. And then over the next couple months, we'll start offering ways for people to actually take action. You know, we'll start some efforts to stop some of the attempts to, say, impose Islamic tribunals in places, places where they're trying to, you know, have these things happen in the schools. We'll help people figure out how to best influence school districts and basically just, you know, start a citizen movement to say, look, America is about religious freedom, but religious freedom does not include your right to try and take away the freedoms that, you know, American soldiers have fought to win and preserve for 200 plus years.
Right, absolutely. Now, you guys are listed on your Facebook site as a nonprofit. Are you guys a registered nonprofit?
The Counter Jihad campaign is an initiative of Secure Freedom, which is part of the Center for Security Policy. So it is not a completely separate entity. It is an educational and advocacy site that we put up. So it's part of us. It is a C3 regular charity nonprofit, and we will obviously be using it to educate as many people as we can, and hopefully, you know, push things in the right direction, because they've been, you know, the enemy has been pushing things in the wrong direction for a long time, and I think, you know, it's long past due that we push back.
Right, right. Hey, I hate to cut you short, but, you know, we got a late start. But, Jimbo, I want you to be able to give our listeners an opportunity to tell them where they can find it, how they can follow, what they can do if they're interested, so they can make sure they check you guys out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, counterjihad.com is the main site. We've got Twitter handle at counterjihadus. You look up counterjihad on Facebook, you'll find it as well. And the bottom line is you will start seeing more videos we'll be making, a lot of social media presence. We'll be putting out a lot of material. We're going to be basically following as the news happens, but also exposing some of the bad groups for what they are and doing exposés on them and pointing out that in many cases the Obama administration's working with the bad guys. We need to shut them down. So I just keep your eyes open online at any of those places, and you will definitely see us in action.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Jim. I'm glad we got you on for a little bit. As always, you know, you're always welcome back on if you got some more you want to cover, things you got to roll out on the site, or anything at Center for Security Policy. We'd love to have you back on, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and sorry for being late, and thanks to all the Stew and the Nun listening.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. You
thanks, brother.
Night, Jim.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay.
Another great show, another great guest. You know, it's always great to have those guys on. Be sure to follow us on Stew and the Nun on Facebook, our Twitter, Thanks for tuning in tonight. Everybody have a great night. Thanks a lot, Stu. You're out.
All right. We'll see you all night. See you all next week.